So we left off on Daf Samachesem and Aleph, and we're revisiting an issue that we've touched upon before, which is when we talk about Nosein Tam Lefgam, which is permitted, what is the process of the impact of the flavoring? The question the Gemara is going to deal with is the following. What happens if, when the kezayis falls in initially, it does something that improves the flavor? But then, as the mixture continues to be, now the kezayis, not the kezayis, the iser, detracts from the flavor. It's called hishpiach ula besof pagam. As opposed to pagam meikara, that from the very moment that it falls into the mixture, it already has a negative effect. So that's the question that the sugya is going to deal with. Now, just as a manner of explanation, I don't see this in the run here, but I'm pretty sure there's a run who says this somewhere. We're going to paskin that no Saint Tam Lefgam is only permitted if it is pogame from the get-go. If it is mashpiach or lebesof pogam, so then it's not permitted.
How is it poke? Is lamech before the that is here usher food? That is here food. Was it rancid in its own right, or is it only have to be rancid in its own right?
No.
Even be perfectly.
The assumption we're dealing with that the Nosein Tam Lefgam in its own right is perfectly edible, mm-hmm. but the effect it has on this particular food is negative. We dealt with examples at the end of the second paragraph. The Gemara assumes that meat in honey, like most Rishonim read, or many Rishonim read, meat and honey has a negative impact. And therefore, if you had a pot that was treif mamish, and it was used within the last 24 hours, but you cooked the honey in it, you heated the honey in it, it would be considered no Saint Tam Lefgam. Even though, in a different substance, it would be no Saint Tam Leshvach. Right? So there are, so we can even be dealing with a case where the iser itself is leshvach. It has a, if you ate it in its own right, it would be, have a positive impact. But because of the food, the specific species of food that it is falling into, that it is cooked, that is being cooked in the pot with that flavor, it exerts has a negative impact.
In reverse, there was the chiddush of asur chalavos. You took two things out of mutar, you mix them together and get an iser. Here you're taking something that's also, and now because you mix it together,
with heter,
it became now you could eat it.
Well, you mix it with heter, yeah. That's not a surprise in its own right.
But if it gives it a negative flavor, if it makes it taste terrible, does it have an effect?
It is effect, but defined terrible. That's a very important point. Mm-hmm. I'm going to assume for the moment, terrible doesn't mean it renders the food that you're eating inedible. If it renders it inedible, then it's not even an issue at all. The assumption is that it has a negative impact. Sometimes you might have put the wrong spice in a food, and you would have been better off without that spice in the food. Right? That's called Nosein Tam Lefgam. Is the food inedible? No. If you put too much salt into certain foods, right, it doesn't taste as good. But it's still edible. Not all. I mean, if you really put too much salt, it may not be edible. But that's called Nosein Tam Lefgam.
What's the makor in the Torah for this?
What's the makor in the Torah that Nosein Tam Lefgam is mutter?
Yeah, that if it other than the vela, where there it's definitely rancid already. It's totally rancid, then that's not the same thing. You're saying that it isn't. You're saying it's perfectly good food. You're saying it's perfectly good food. It just doesn't match with this food. But in and of itself, it's not like Nivela.
I don't want to explore that particular issue. If you'd like to take a look at that, the very long Tosus Dibo Maschel V'idach on Samach Zayin Amid Beis addresses that issue. Whatever the makor is, there's a source. It may be an extrapolation. So we've shown him talk about this. It may be an extrapolation from the kli, which is pogame in the tafshil, so it may be an extrapolation, maybe an extrapolation of svara. But I don't want. I purposely skipped over that issue. I don't think it's important from a conceptual perspective. I don't think it makes a difference from a lamaisa perspective. It doesn't matter. Okay. So the question then is, why is it that if no Saint Tam Lefgam is permitted, why is it not a no Saint Tam Leshvach? That if it's mashpiach ul besof pagam, why would that be prohibited? And I think there's a run. I didn't see it on the riff. But I think the Beis Yosef quotes, I thought it was Iran, who explains very simply that if you are dealing with something which is be'en, in order for it to be permitted on the basis of no Saint Tam Lefgam, it has to be completely inedible. It has to be nevela surcha. It has to be totally rotten and normal people wouldn't eat it. If, however, you are dealing with something that has iser in it and it doesn't taste wonderful, but it's edible, So then it's prohibited. So the explanation for why mashbiach, or the besov pogam, would be prohibited is the following. When the iser falls into the heter, and it now flavors it, what are we looking at? Well, basically, the food that you're looking at is aser. We now treat it as a unit. Now what happens? The impact of the iser now starts to cause the food to not taste as good as it maybe should. But the food is still edible, and since the food has been redefined as a mixture of iser, so it remains aser until it becomes totally inedible. That's the svara of why somebody would say that mashbiach ulebesof pagam is prohibited, even though no sein tam lefgam in itself is permitted. Now, what would the other position hold? The other position would claim that even though you're not allowed to eat the food right now, it's not when the iser first falls in and it gives it a positive flavor for the moment, even though you're not allowed to eat the food right now, nonetheless, it's not that all of the food is defined as iser, but rather because the iser is being flavoring, you're benefiting from the iser in a positive way. Once the iser turns around and now becomes prohibited, negative, it becomes no sein tam lefgam, so now you're not being nene from the iser anymore. I want to give you sort of a conceptual analog to this, even though I don't think the two are actually tied together. Let me take the following scenario. Supposing I have a pot of 30 kizasim of heter, and one kizayis of chazer schmaltz falls in. And now I'm not allowed to eat it because there wasn't shishim, I can't even taste the chazer schmaltz. Fine. Now, supposing this mixture of 31 kizasim falls into another pot, how much food do I need of heter in that other pot in order to be able to consume the mixture? So right now we have one kizayis of chazer, 30 kizasim of heter, and this all falls into another pot. This question is a major machlokas harishonim with enormous ramifications all over the place in kashrus shailos. Midda oraisa, it would appear that pretty much everybody agrees that all you need in the other pot is 30 more kizasim of heter, because I'll have one kizayis of chazir, 30 kizayisim of heter, and another 30 kizayisim of heter. And that's how the mechaber paskins.
So it's batel b'shishim.
It's batel b'shishim. Everything's going to be batel b'shishim, but here's the catch. Let me give you the one example where everybody agrees there's an issur d'oraisa. Supposing 30 kizayisim of meat are cooked with one kizayis of chalav, of cream. Tastes delicious. You can taste the cream in the meat. Now I have a mixture of 31 kizasim that I can't eat. If this falls into another pot, how much heter do I need? Let's say it falls into meat, better. I say it falls into meat. Now theoretically, if it falls into other meat, so now if I mix it up and mainly cook it a long time, the taste of the cream is going to dissipate and I won't be able to taste it. So how much meat do I need in the second pot? I have 1 plus 30. How much meat do I need in the second pot in order to eat it?
1860.
That is correct. 1860. Give the man a prize. Right? Why? Because with the expression the Gemara uses is chaticha nasas nevela. By basar b'chalav, it's a machlokas in the Gemara. And there might be one Rishon who disagrees, but we paskin, and almost all the Rishon and paskin, this is an issur d'orais of chaticha nasas nevela. Once you cook the milk and the meat together and they flavor each other, it's now a new chetz of iser. Here's where it's heter plus heter creates iser. You now need 60 times this heter, 60 times this iser in order for the entire thing to be permitted.
Wow. What would that have meaning that you wouldn't need it?
So the question, it's the same issue that I was raising before. You might say that you're not allowed to eat meat when there's milk that flavors it. You're not allowed to benefit from the tam of basar b'chalav. But if I take this basar b'chalav, this 30 plus 1, and I put it into another 30 kizasim, because I'm cooking it, let's say, in a liquid, the flavor is going to dissipate, and I'm no longer going to be able to taste basar b'chalav. Right? Now, that very same kizayis of cream that fell into 60 kizasim of basar, I can eat it. So now, physically speaking, these two mixtures would be identical, right? The one that fell into 60, and the one that fell into 30, and then that fell into 30. They should be physically identical. Yet the Gemara has a machlokas. I'm going to present certainly one straightforward read in the Gemara. The Gemara has a machlokas of whether efshar lesochto is permitted or not permitted. You could ask conceptually the following same question: suppose I invent There was what in the Cat in the Hat comes back. There was a magical substance that gets. Is it Voom? Ilan, you're the closest to your childhood. What? Maybe you need someone who's older reading it to their younger kids. Okay, it's this magical substance. I take this or grandchildren. Can I know her? I take this Basar B'chol, this 1 in 30, and I apply a Voom to it, and it vacuums out all of the challah, and I can't taste it anymore. The Gemara says there's a machlokas tanoi, machlokas amoraim, where the efshar lisochto, literally, if I can wring the milk out of the meat, whether that now becomes permitted. And as now that I've gotten the tam of the chalaf out of the basar, and I can't taste basar b'chalaf, does that now become permitted? We paskin, and almost all Rishonim paskin, Shulchan Aruch paskins, I don't think we even consider the other tzad, that efshar lisochto is also, the principle is known as chanan, chaticha nases nevela. In other words, when I cook them together, now I get a new chefetz of iser, and now if you want to be mevatel that, you need 60 times that. Now, the question is, what about by sha'ar isurim, by other prohibitions? In other words, I have nevela that gets, that gets mixed into meat, right, where I can taste it now. And now this gets mixed into other meat. So this is a machlokas harishonim. It would appear that everybody agrees that if you hold that it's that chaticha nases nevela by sha'ar isurim means everything but basar b'chalav. If you believe that chaticha nases nevela by all other prohibitions, it's only rabbinic. It's only midrabbanan. It's the position of Rabbeinu Tam in a very long Tosfos in Chulin. The Mechaber and Chachmei Svarad assume that chaticha nases nevela does not apply even midrabbanan to all other isurim. The only time chaticha nases nevela plays any role is when it comes to basar b'chalav. Okay, now why do I just invoke this? I'm not saying that our position has to be dependent. In fact, I'm pretty sure it's not dependent upon that machlokas. But conceptually speaking, the machlokas of whether mashbiach ulebesof pagam is prohibited or not is conceptually similar to the question of whether you say chatichas nases nevela or not. In other words, if you say that when the iser falls in and it originally it is mashbiach, it improves the flavor of the entire mixture, and that is now all usr. So now you would say the fact that it becomes pagum subsequently doesn't matter. It's like a nevela that died, and a nevela gets a little bit rotten, but it's edible, right? It's not, and certainly that nevela would have a negative impact if you put it into stuff, but it's edible. It is edible, al yidei hadchak. If you really push yourself, you can eat it now. In order for the nevela to become permitted on the grounds of nosein talmud gam, it has to be srucha, it has to be completely inedible. So the same thing would hold true here. Once the iser fell in, and when it fell in, it improved the heter, and now the entire thing is usher to eat. In order for that to become permitted, it has to become pagum lagamri. It has to become srucha, and since it's not, it's just, if you wait a little bit, now it has a negative impact. We've been better off if the Isra hadn't fallen, and it still all remains Asr. And the other position, that's the conceptually the parallel to Chaticha Nases Nevela. And the other position in the Gemara, which we don't paskin like, would say that no, that even though you're not allowed to eat the entire mixture, when the Isr gives a positive flavor right now, it's not because it's really all Asr, it's because by eating it now, you're deriving benefit of Achila from the Isr, because it tastes good in this. But once it starts to have a negative impact, so now the Isr is simply no Saint Tom of Gam. I don't want to draw a rigorous connection between the two and claim they're dependent upon one another, because we paskin, everybody paskins, Hishtbiach ulebesof pagam is Asr. Yet the question of chaticha nases nevela, and this is not pasur b'chalav, the question of chaticha nases nevela by all other isurim is a machlokas. So the Ramah, for the Ramah, who says that we apply chanan, chaticha nases nevela by all other isurim in the Rabbanan, it's consistent, theoretically, with hishpiach or the besov pagam. But the Mechaber does not believe that chanan applies by anything except for basar b'chalav, and therefore, and yet he paskins hishpiach also pagam is asur. So you have to be able to distinguish between the two. It's not literally ha b'hataya. They don't depend upon one another directly, but at least conceptually, you have to make a distinction, but there is a conceptual similarity here. Okay. Fine. So now let's take a look at what the Gemara has here. Amar Ula, the fourth line on Samaches Amid Aleph. Machlokes shehishbiach ulebesof pogam, Aval poge mi'ikara divrei hakol mutar. So he says that the machlokes, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon, regarding no saying Talmud of Gam, is only when it is mashpiach, and then it turns into being pogame. But if it is pogame from the get-go, then it is permitted. Now, Tosus points out, Rashi doesn't comment, but Tosus points out in Dibor Maschil Amar Ula that the Gemara here is taking a totally different approach. Ula is taking a totally different approach to understanding the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Shimon from earlier. If you recall, in the immediately preceding Gemara, the Gemara presented the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Shimon by Nevela, as Rabbi Shimon believes that a Nevela Srucha, when it's Srucha, is permitted, completely permitted, no questions asked. Rabbi Meir only permits by a Nevela if it's Srucha Meikara. Right, if from the time the animal died, before it died, it already had sick, it had all these lesions, it's disgusting, it's vile, nobody would eat it, only then does Rabbi Meir permit. Now, if you believe that, there's no way that Rabbi Meir is going to say that if the Isser is pogame the mixture immediately, but it doesn't render it edible, there's no way Rabbi Meir is going to say it's permitted. So Ula is fundamentally ignoring the previous sugya. He understands the machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon very differently, and he understands Rabbi Meir's position as being far less stringent than presented in the immediately preceding Gemara. So Tosus just makes that observation that Ula does not fit. His understanding of the machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon doesn't fit with what came before. It's a totally different explanation. It doesn't have an impact upon us for halacha because we paskin like Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Shimon's position hasn't really changed from the previous Gemara to this Gemara. But okay. So that is what Ula says, that the machlokas is only when the food falls in initially, it has a positive impact, but then subsequently turns negative. Eisvei Rabbi Chaga l'Ula. Rav Chaga asks a question against Ula. Yayin shenafa l'toch adashim v'chometz shenafa l'toch grisim is aser v'Rabbi Shimon matir. So we've seen this is the case is from our Mishnah. Wine falls into lentils and vinegar falls into beans, and the Tanakhama of this brisa says that it's aser and Rabbi Shimon permits. And the assumption of the Gemara is, and everybody accepts this, that the debate is about no Saint Tam Lefgam. And the Tanakhama, presumably, is Rabbi Meir, even though he's not named, and he's arguing with Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Chaga explains the following. V'ha-ha-ha, de-paga me'ikarahu upligi. He says, everybody knows that when you put vinegar into hot beans, or wine into hot lentils, everybody knows that it has a negative impact. It doesn't cook well. I mean, I have no idea, but that's the Gemara's assumption. I've never tried it. When I teach Yeridea, usually at the end of the year, so one of the topics that comes up is davar charif, sharp food. So I've done it at least a couple of times. I've taught Yeridea. At the end of the year, we send someone to one of the local supermarkets to get every kind of food to taste. You know, onions and garlic and some of the hot peppers and so on. We make sure we have bread too, because otherwise I'd have killed a few students, including myself by now. Right. So I've never tried this experiment though, because I don't have a stove in my shiur room where we can heat stuff and so on. But you can do an experiment and see what it tastes like. But the Gemara says, "V'ha'hacha de'paga me'ikara." When it falls into the hot beans or the hot lentils, it's pogame. Upligi, and yet the Tanaim argue, and the Tanakhama, Rabbi Meir, prohibits. So you see that by mashpiach or the besof, you see that by paga me'ikara, Rabbi Meir certainly prohibits. Right? It's possible that Rabbi Shimon would permit across the board, both by paga me'ikara when it initially is detracts, and even it's hishpiach ulebesof pagam. We don't know what Rabbi Shimon's position is on this, but it's clear that Rabbi Meir's position from this brisa is that paga me'ikara is prohibited, and if paga me'ikara is prohibited, it's a kal v'chomer that hishpiach ulebesof pagam is prohibited. So Amar Ula responds. This is truly a dis, as we would say in contemporary language. Chaga lomeide yadia ma'amri rabbanon. Chaga doesn't know what the rabbis are saying. Tifta kabosev, and he's asking kashas. Now, it seemed like a good raya. So the answer is hacha b'maya skinan. You know what the Bryce is talking about? Kigon shenafal toch grisim tzonanim v'hirticham. No, if it falls into cold beans or cold lentils, when it falls in, then actually that tastes good. But once you're martiach it, once you heat it up, so then it has a negative impact, and therefore it's nase kemi shehishbiach ulebeso pagam ve'aser according to Rabbi Meir. So in other words, this brisa is not a case of pagam meikara; it's a case of hishbiach ulebesof pagam. And as we would expect according to Ula, that is a machlokas Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Shimon. Okay, this was the opinion of Ula, but Rabbi Yochanan Amar bepogam meikara machlokas. The machlokas is when it's pogame from the start. In other words, Rabbi Meir would prohibit, even though when it falls in, immediately it has a negative impact. So now the Gemara asks, and it might be obvious if you step back from the formulation, bepogame karmach lokes, iboyilahu, bepogame karmach lokes, avalishpiach olubesov pogam, divrea kol aser, olduma bembezo mach lokes. In other words, Rabbi Yochanan said they argue by pogame kara. Does his statement imply that they argue only by pogam eikara, but hishpiach so pogam, even Rabbi Shimon would admit to Rabbi Meir that it's prohibited, or no? Rabbi Yochanan is responding perhaps to Ula, who said that they argue, that they all agree by pogam eikara that it's permitted, and Rabbi Yochanan says, it's a machlokas by pogam eikara whether it's permitted. And he is not giving away, he might agree that by hishpiach ula beso pogam, they also argue, in other words, they argue across the board. No Saint Tam lefgam. Whether it's initially good, whether it's not initially good, Rabbi Meir says, no good. Rabbi Shimon says, it's fine. And the Gemara's answer is, teku, we don't know. Amar Rav Amram, efshar isa lahad Rabbi Yochanan v'latanya labe mas nisan? Is it possible that Rabbi Yochanan uttered such a basic statement, and there's no Mishnah that would in fact demonstrate that Rabbi Yochanan is correct? Nafak, he went out, a duck, he investigated the Ashkach, and he found. Now, if you notice, by the way, in our Gemara, it says Ditanya, and then in the Mesoras Hashas, they erase and they change it to Ditnan. It is generally assumed by the Lomdei Beis Medrash that Tanan refers to a Mishnah and Tanya refers to a Braisa. I don't actually believe this is true. I don't believe it's true because there are probably scores of cases in Shas where the at least with printed text we have, and I haven't checked the manuscripts, but I assume it's the case, have Ditanya in reference to a Mishnah. Now, what happens every time that occurs? Whenever there's a passage quoted as Ditanya, and yet it appears in the Mishnah, you know what happens? The Mesoras Hashas comes along and changes the girsa. Now, I believe, by the way, the tradition of Ditnan and Ditanya goes back a long way. It may go back almost to the late Gaonic period, where you have start having these Sefer HaKlalim. They have rules. Rules for, you know, how different terms are used in the Gemara. It's not just modern, you know, student books for students, you know, start beginners in Gemara, they have this. The, you know, laying down the rules of Gemara, what certain words mean, was a very ancient enterprise. I happen to be skeptical this, you know, to say that it has to be the Tanan in order to be a Mishnah. I don't think I've ever noticed a reverse case where it says the Tanan, but it's not in the Mishnah. But I think there are any number of cases where it says the Tanya, it happens to be a Mishnah. The fact that they get corrected is because somebody wants it to conform to the rule, but I don't know that the rule absolutely always holds. So, anyway, he was looking for a Masnisan. Masnisan is our Mishnah, as opposed to Masnisa, which could be even a Braisa. He says, it must be somewhere in our Mishnah. So he goes and he finds the following Braisa, which is found in, following Mishnah, which is found in Orla. Now, just a word of background to this, and we mentioned this a few times. Generally speaking, our rule is that in order for something to be permitted when there's a mixture of Isser and Heter, you have to have Bitul HaTam. You have to nullify the Tam. We usually use Shishim as the rule. It's a rule of thumb, because almost all foods that people typically cook would be Bato B'Shishim. But if you have something that's called a milsa de avida lataima, let's say you have a spice that is very powerful, and you put in a pinch of the spice, and it has an impact upon the flavor. So even if you have 1,000 times heter keneged the iser, it's still prohibited. And those rishonim who say that tam ki'ikar is doraisa would say it's prohibited min ha-Torah. In other words, shishim is just a rule of thumb. There are exceptions to it. Similar to that is a principle, but this is only mid the Rabbanan, pretty much according to almost everybody, is a principle of davar hama'amid. If you have something where it is batel by volume b'shishim, and you don't actually taste the substance that you put in, but the iser that you put, that fell in had a transformative impact upon the heter, so even though you can't taste it, you can in effect see that it's there. You can detect its presence, and the food remains prohibited. Now, it's generally assumed to be only a rabbinic prohibition, because the bottom line is you can't actually taste the iser. The two classic examples of this we've encountered both already is number one, rennet, and number two, yeast. You can have rennet, which comes from the non-kosher animal stomach. You can have yeast that either comes from truma. You can have yeast that comes from other isurim, in other words, sourdough. What?
Gelatin
is more complicated, but yes, if gelatin is if food that used non-kosher gelatin is prohibited, it's because gelatin is a davar hamamid. It's a more complicated one only because gelatin may be have been reduced to an inedible interim stage, and that's what the machlokes is about. But yes, fundamentally, those who say that gelatin is a problem, poskim in chutz laretz, it's on the basis of davar hamamid. You can't taste the gelatin, but it has a transformative impact upon the food in which it is placed. So therefore, if I have a tiny bit of sourdough, and there's 300 times in dough connected the sourdough, but the sourdough causes the bread to rise, mm-hmm. I can't taste that sourdough. I can taste the impact.
Using sourdough?
As opposed to
sourdough, not kosher.
It could be, let's say, truma. It's not inherently non-kosher. Okay, let's say it's sourdough truma. The question is, can a non-kohen eat it? Let's say it's sourdough of chadash, and they haven't brought the carbon omer, so nobody can eat it. So there are a whole host of ways it could be usser. Somebody could have bowed down to the wheat that was used to make the sourdough and made it usser b'hana, right? Any of these things could, you know, we have lots of ways of making things usser. Okay, so... So even though you can't taste that tiny bit of sourdough, but because it had an impact and it eventually caused the dough to rise, and that hasn't that in other words, the dough changes on its own. It changes because the presence of the yeast. Therefore, it's a davar hamayim and it is not batel. There's no bittel for that. Again, the bittel is technically speaking a midoraisa is tends to be limited to ta'am, to flavor, but the concept of bittel of ta'am is that if you can't taste it, it doesn't exist anymore. And therefore, midravonon at least, when you have a davar amaimid, even though you can't taste it, it's hard to say that it doesn't exist in the world anymore because it left a permanent impact. That's conceptually why the Chachamim prohibited davar amaimid, even though it's not tasteable.
The way you formulated that question, is that actually a question? Meaning that the yeast that has an impact on the world, but the yeast is no longer... I don't know if actually chemically if the yeast actually exists or if it's discernible.
Well, you can't taste
it's the
that
impact.
Yeast.
Right. So I'm saying the impact is obvious, but it doesn't mean that thing exists anymore. It could be it's now been transformed. So does that...
No, so that right, the formulation? The assumption right? is the assumption is that when the yeast has transformed the substance... So, you know, this is a philosophical question. If there's a great teacher who has died, but he has left a permanent impact upon his students who carry his teachings and his legacy in the world, is he still alive?
No, the question would be, is it asur b'hana, is it asur b'eating it? So you're benefiting from the yeast, but the yeast may not be present. So that's the question. So if you
you're benefiting by eating something where the yeast had an impact upon its flavor. If it didn't have an impact upon its flavor, it wouldn't be...
It's not flavor. It could be...
Well, it is flavor. It is flavor. In other words, dough, when you don't allow it to leaven, tastes very different. It doesn't have the sour taste that leavened bread does.
But gelatin or...
Gelatin, I'm guessing, is probably more a texture thing or something like that. Okay. But rennet is, I mean, but at some level, like rennet certainly, it's not just a texture thing. Cheese is not just milk in a solid form. So I can't speak to the gelatin issue, but I would assume that even if the impact were not only on pure taste, we still might say that. Like, I think they talk about, I never teach this in your day, because I don't think it's explicit in Hilchos Taruvos. Let's say you have a coloring agent that you can't taste. Right. That was the whole issue, I think, years ago. I'll never forget. It's a pathetic statement about us as a community. But I think the two loudest cheers ever heard in my shul, in Teaneck, were when the rabbi got up, and to make what we call the rabbi announcements, which come not before Don Olam, but before Yankel Okeinu. And the rabbi got the two loudest cheers were heard. Number one, when Dunkin' Donuts in Teaneck was getting Hashgacha, but even I think preceded that when M&M's, when Mars was getting the Hashgacha. Okay, it's nice that we want to cheer that they're poisoning us, but whatever. But I remember, I think the issue they used to claim, the issue with M&M's was the karma, the coloring was derived from carmine beetles or something like that. So I think that there's an issue even though you can't taste it. I'm pretty sure, Ilan, you should do a tasting with your friends. See, a blind taste. Can they taste the difference between the blue M&Ms, which everybody wants because they're the rarest, I think, and the brown M&Ms, which I think are the least popular? Right? Can you actually taste the difference? I suspect the answer is no. But that's your homework. Do they eat M&Ms in Ramaz? Okay. Okay, chocolate ones. So anyway, so I think Chazusa also has an impact. I don't remember coming up in Hilchos Taravos. It must come up somewhere. I should research that. So it doesn't necessarily have to be purely Tom based. So even a texture issue might be an issue. Okay. So Rav Amram now presents the following Mishnah. Se'or shel chulin, shenafa l'toch ha'isa. You have sourdough of chulin, and I'll stress, I think I mentioned this one of the previous times, yeast, Fleischmann's yeast is not seor. You don't have to sell it on Pesach. You can. I know it would be horrific for Benosi Soil to allow such a thing to remain in the refrigerator, but as long as you don't use it, it's fine. In other words, that's chemical yeast that has been extracted from the dough. It's not seor. So in order to be seor, obviously, once you put that yeast into dough, it's now seor. But when it's separated from it, the same thing is true with rennet. Rennet, if you extract it from the stomach lining of the non-kosher shechted cow, of the nevela cow, so once you extract the chemical rennet, and that is truly inedible, and it doesn't have any of the basa with it, it's no longer a problem. But once you put, even though then when it's in the stomach lining and you use that to milk, even though it's the rennet, it's not the stomach lining that's doing it, once it's in its kind of natural setting, it takes on the character of the stomach lining, it's basar nevela, it takes on, in the case of the dough, it takes on the status of seor. But seor here, and obviously they didn't extract the chemical yeast, the seor here always means sourdough. We translate yeast, but that's not technically correct. Seor shel chulin shenafa l'toch ha'isa, v'yesh bo kedei lahachmitz v'hechmitza. There's enough sourdough there to cause this dough, enough to make it rise, to leaven it, and then it does so. V'achar kach nafal seor shel truma or seor shel kiloi hakerem. You have two different kinds of prohibitions. One, which Kohanim can eat and Azar cannot eat, permitted by Hana, and one, Kiloya Kerem. Let's say you planted wheat, barley, to keep it simple, wheat, barley, and grape seeds within one mapolas yad, as they call it, and that is Kiloy HaKerem min HaTorah. It's Aser Bahana. When that wheat grows, it's Aser Bahana. So if you have sourdough from that wheat, or sourdough of Truma, where Azar at least can't eat it, so then... Now the dough already had enough to make it sourdough, to make it bread, and now what happened? You make it worse by putting more sour in it. It doesn't help. It makes it worse. The achar kach, again, nafal sour shel truma, sour shel kolay kerem, the yesh bo kedei lahachmitz, and that sour on its own could have been machmitz the dough itself, asur. The dough is prohibited. Even though, at least now the Gemara is assuming for the moment, it's no Saint Tom Lefgam. The additional sour is not beneficial. And for Rabbi Shimon Matir, the ha-ha-ha, the pagamei karahu, upligi. This is no Saint Tom shel Isser, which is pogame from the get-go, and yet the Tanakhama, presumably Rabbi Meir, holds that it's prohibited. So you see that Rabbi Yochanan's position of pogame meikara is a machlokes is already found in the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Zeira, no, not quite. It might be that everybody would agree ordinarily that if the additional Isser that fell in was pogame and brought no benefit whatsoever, that no Saint Talmud of Gam would be permitted. But you know, there is theoretically additional benefit when more Seor falls in, which is Hoil Uruya Lechamea Bo Kama Isos Acheros. Lechamea is a word that you probably recognize, but maybe you don't realize that you recognize. You will utter the word or the same root in 5 days, 4 days from now, and 5 days from now. Kol Chamira Vachami'a. Chami'a with the ayin is Chamira is Seor. Chami'a with an ayin is cognate with Hebrew chametz. Right? One is leavened material and one actually is sourdough. People do not normally, you eat leavened bread, you don't normally eat sourdough. Seor is not usually consumed directly by people. It's used to have an impact upon bread. By Pesach, if you eat it, you're chayiv kares, both for seor and for chametz. So Reb Zeira suggests that in this case, perhaps Rabbi Meir, the Tanakama, prohibits poge meikara because it's not actually totally poge meikara. Because by this additional seor falling in, if you bake it right now, it might make the bread taste a little bit worse than it would have tasted without the seor, but you theoretically could leave it alone and it will make more sourdough more rapidly, and you can use now all of this dough. You're not going to eat this dough, but you could use it to be mechamea isos acheros. So you get a kind of indirect hana of achila. Maybe that's why in this case Rabbi Meir, the Tanakama, would prohibit poge meikara. But in a regular case where when the isra fell in, it was pogame and there's no benefit, there's no slightly longer term benefit, then even Rabbi Meir would prohibit. That's where the Gemara, at least the Harbi Zera, sort of pushes off this proof of Rav Amar. Tashima. Now we're going to get a longer version of this. Seor shel truma vishel chulin shenaflu letocha isa bezeh kedei lahachmetz uvezeh kedei lahachmetz. You have two doses of seor that fall into the isa at the same time. Each one alone would have been enough in order to accomplish what you wanted. Now the two work together, and they do leaven the dough, but they maybe over-leaven the dough a little bit. What will the din be here? And the Tanakhama says, Aser, and Rabbi Shimon, Matir. Now, just to hold the thought for a second, I want to just make a comment that Tosos has here. I think it's Tosos, unless it was the Ran. I thought it was Tosos. Of one concept that we have learned before that is totally irrelevant here, correct, Sam? Zev is egorim. We have previously learned before a question of machlokas atanaim. What happens when heter and isser join together to have an impact upon something else, transforming something else, creating something else? Now, for example, let's say... This may not work according to everybody, but let me give the following example. Supposing that you had an animal that was asur bahana'a, for whatever reason, that was mated with an animal that was permitted bahana'a. Let's say the mother's asur bahana'a, the father is not. What is the status of the offspring? Now, if there were spontaneous generation, or if there were asexual reproduction, more accurately, and only the mother produced the Vlad, then we would say the Vlad has the status of the mother. I presume, it must be explicitly stated somewhere, that if you have a cow that's asur b'hana, and you milk the cow, pretty sure you're not allowed to be benefit from the milk. You're not allowed to. If you have a cow that's prohibited, a sheep that's prohibited b'hana, you're not allowed to benefit from the gizos, from the shearings of the sheep. So what happens if the cow that's asur b'hana gives birth, but it takes two animals to make a baby cow? So the question is, in this case, it's zev is egorim. That appears to be an example of zev is egorim, and it's a machlokas atanaim. That is irrelevant here, as I think Tosos, or one of the other Rishonim, points out, because in order to be zev is egorim, it has to be that each one in its own right is not capable of producing the result. You need the combination of both. They both have an effect, do the same kind of work on something, and then there's a machlokas of zev is egorim. But here, each of the two sourdoughs, the chulin and the truma, were capable on their own of transforming the dough.
Is there a sequence like in the
no? At the same no. We'll get there. This is at the same time. This is bevasachas. Same time. So here the Tanakhama says aser, and Rabbi Shimon says mutar. Nofal, the second to last line in the Gemara. Nofal shel truma tchila. If truma falls in first, and it impacts the isa, and then the chulin falls in, divrei hakol aser. Finally, nofal shel chulin. The achar kach nofal shel truma, o shel kaloya kerem. Aser. That's the Rabbi Shimon Mate. That's the piece of this of Mishnah that we saw extracted earlier. So the, I don't know if this is that Mishnah, if this is a different Brisa maybe.
So the original Mishnah is when they fell in together?
No. No. The original Mishnah is Chulin, then Truma, which is the last of these three lines. I didn't check. I don't know if this is the Mishnah or this is just a Brisa, Tosefta, with a fuller version. Either way, the Gemara now cites it for the last part. That for the last part, Nafal shechum achakash shel truma o shel kala kerem aser. Rabbi Shimon matir v'ha'hocha depaga meikara. When the truma falls in, the dough already is already leavened, so it's pogam when it falls in. V'chitema. Of course, you're going to say we answered the question already. V'chitema hachanami k'de Rabbi Zera. You want to answer now. Those of you who are astute will realize this answer is only going to work for the last third part of the brisa. We still have to deal with the first two parts of this brisa. But for the moment, Tosus is bothered by this. Tosus says the Gemara just wants to present the entire brisa. There's one more line the Gemara wants to present. So Toshma Misefa, Hayayin Shanafa Lesocha Dashin V'chomet Shanafa Latoch Grisin is Aser of Rabbi Shimon Matir V'hohochanami Depaga Me'ikara. The same way Rav Chaga asked the question, that's how the Gemara is it's the same line. It's the exact same Bryce that he was quoting. The same way that Rabbi Chaga read this line earlier, that's how the Gemara is reading it right now. The assumption is that the wider the vinegar falls into hot lentils or beans, and it's pogam immediately. The Rabbi Shimon Matir. But if you want to say, we can answer that one also. Hachanami. Kiddushoni le'ulal Rabbi Chaga. Kishbiach l'besof pogam. Meaning it was cold when it fell in, and therefore this is not a case of poge meikara. So no, that won't help us, because umi pligi, kishishbiach l'beso pogam, did they really argue? V'ha katani, nafal shel truma tchila, divrei hakol aser. Go back to the second line of the brisa, where the truma falls in first, and then the heter falls in, and at that point, the impact of the truma se'or is negative, and everybody agrees that it's aser. So you see that they agree by hishpiach or b'sof pogam that it's aser, and hence, obviously, the only by process of elimination, the case in which they argue is pogam meikara, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan is correct. Now notice that actually, by quoting this brisa, the Gemara has solved two problems. The problem that is explicitly solved, or the problem that it was explicitly invoked to solve, was, is there a Mishnah that supports Rabbi Yochanan's position that they argue by Pagam Me'ikara? But you'll notice that the Gemara has actually proven something else as well. You know what it's proven? They've answered the question that the previous line left as a teku. Rabbi Yochanan said they argue by Pagam Me'ikara. We weren't sure that Rabbi Yochanan held that they argue Dafka by Pagam Me'ikara, but they agree that when it is mashpiach and then pogam, that it is prohibited, or whether Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Meir argue across the board. Doesn't matter pogam meikara, doesn't matter shpiach v'so pogam, Rabbi Meir says nothing doing, Rabbi Shimon says it's fine. This Mishnah, or Brisa, proves that they agree by hishpiach v'so pogam, which means not only have we found a Mishnah that supports Rabbi Yochanan's idea that they argue by Pagam Meikara, we also found the Mishnah that demonstrates, that very same Mishnah, that everybody agrees that Hishpiach L'Besov Pagam is Aser. Tosfos points this out already. Tosfos says on the second to last line, it's the last Tosfos, on the previous Amun, Samachasam Af Teku. Va'afal Gav, Dilekamon, Pashtina lemi brisa. We just read this. The paga mikar pligi hishpiach l'besof divrei hakol aser mikom akom also lahem beveis hamedrash b'teku. When the question was originally asked in the base medrash, they had no answer, and the sugya was apparently recorded this way. Vishuv pashtua, and later on they answered the question. And this is a fascinating observation of Tosos. in the sense that it's making a claim about the editorial activity of the Gemara. That a question that was once presented in the Beis Medrash and Lef B'Teiku, clearly the editors of the Sugya already know, even though it says Teiku, they know what the answer to the question is, because they certainly know Daf Samach Chasam Beis, and yet they choose to leave the Teiku in there. It's kind of interesting. Okay, it doesn't... Of course, the only way around it, but there is no way around it as far as I can tell, is to claim that we're misinterpreting things, and the Gemara, the Braisa here that we just read is not actually solving Rabbi Yochanan's problem, but I have no idea how you would read the Braisa otherwise. Right? It's very clear. The whole point of the Gemara's proof is that when the Truma falls in first, and then the Hulin falls in, that's called Hishbiach Ulebesof Pagam. And everybody agrees that it's Usser. And since they all agree that Hishbiach L'Bsof Pagam is Usser, the only way, the only place that can be a Machlokes is obviously by Pagam Eikara. The whole proof of the Gemara has to answer Rabbi Yochanan, the question about Rabbi Yochanan that wasn't answered before. So it's kind of interesting. It's not unheard of, by the way, in Shas, although this is a little odder, where you have one Sugya that operates with certain assumptions and doesn't know certain things, and a later Sugya is aware of something that the earlier Sugya wasn't aware of. You have such cases. This is somewhat unusual because literally, the Gemara says Teiku, and then proceeds to cite effectively. I mean, it cites the short version, and then it cites the long version. So for the Gemara not to acknowledge that it has solved the problem strikes me as a little bit unusual, but that is in fact what the Gemara does. Okay. So now the Gemara has, with respect to this Braisa, one last question. The Gemara says, we're now 8 lines down from the top of Samaches Amid Beis. Hanitzlase bave de katani lamali. Why do you need these 3 lines in the Mishnah? 3 cases, and let's review them. The 2 fall in together. Machlokas, I'm going to say Rabbi Meir. It doesn't say Rabbi Meir's name, but I'll assume it's Rabbi Meir. Machlokas Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Shimon. Truma falls in first, then Chulin. Everybody agrees it's Aser. Chulin falls in first, then Truma. Machlokas from Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says the following. Hani Tlosa Bave, these 3 sections, the Katani, that are cited in the Mishnah, Lamali. Why do you need them? Why does each one need them? What is the Chiddush of each one? Bishlama Bava de Seifa, the third one, teaches us Kamash Malan, the Pogemi Karamachalokes. Right? That's a case where the Chulin falls in first, then the Truma, and when we say that it is all that is a machlokas. So and that's clearly a case of pagam eikara. When the sa'or of truma falls in, there's already enough sa'or in there. Nonetheless, it's a machlokas, so we see that they argue by pogam eikara. Mitziosa, the middle case nami, teaches us hishbiach ulbesof pagam divrei hakol aser. Right? Truma falls in, then chulin doesn't help you at all. Everybody agrees it's aser. Ela reisha lamali. What do you need the first case when they fall in together? Hashta uma seifa de lo kamishabach klal asri rabbanon. If a case where the chulin falls in first and then the truma, where the truma never has any positive impact, there the rabbanon, Rabbi Meir, prohibits. Then reisha in the first case the kamishabach, when the two fall in together, both the truma and the chulin at least initially are both having a positive impact. Then it, the truma turns around and the chulin and has a negative impact. So Rabbi Meir prohibits when it has a negative impact from the get-go. Certainly, when the two start out together being positive and then turn negative, he's going to prohibit. So the Gemara says, obviously, Amar Abaye Reisha L'Rabbi Shimon Itzrich. Now, obviously, the Chiddush is for Rabbi Shimon. The Rabbi Shimon, granted, says that if the Truma falls in first, no good. If the Chulin falls in first, good. What if the two fall in together? So Abaye explains. Reisha l'Rabbi Shimon itzterech. V'hachi kamri le'rabbanon l'Rabbi Shimon. Isa zo ru'uy l'hachmitz b'shtei shaos. This Isa without was on its own, with just the sa'or shechulin, could have taken 2 hours to leaven. However, mi garam lo shetachmitz b'sha achas. What causes it to be machmitz in 1 hour instead? Iser. And that's enough, because it does it faster. Rabbi Shimon says, kishishbichu shneim, Rabbi Shimon says no. He says that in this case he feels that since the chulin since the truma, I should say, never acts alone to be mashpiach, and then ultimately it is pogame, therefore he says that it is in fact, that's considered no sin tam lifgam. In other words, he would probably say that the truma never actually had the formative impact enough to make this bread taste better, and therefore it is prohibited.
And the fact that it leavens an hour earlier?
That's nice.
That doesn't have any impact, according to him?
According to Rabbi Shimon, that has no impact.
Even though it is an actual impact.
There's a benefit. He would probably say that in the end of the day, you never really got any benefit from. In other words, it's going to continue. I don't think you stop the process. You don't bake it and freeze it then. It keeps going, I presume.
Right. Yeah.
Because otherwise it's not actually pogame. If you put a lot of yeast in, too much yeast in, but you don't allow it to actually rise more than the normal, it's probably not going to have that much of an impact. I presume it's because it actually goes further and has a negative impact. That's what I would assume. Okay. Fine. So now the Gemara asks the following. L'Rabbi Shimon, litzaref heter v'isir b'hadei hadadi, v'litzar. According to Rabbi Shimon, why don't we say that the heter v'isir are mitzdarfim ze'im ze? Now, the Gemara doesn't explain.
Why would it be a certain?
But we do have a concept. We usually think that if you have heter mitzdarif le'iser, we've explored this in a previous sugya a little bit. Heter is mitzdarif le'iser. So the question is for Rabbi Shimon: maybe the heter and the iser should combine here, and we should treat it all as iser. And everything should be aser. Now it's all the sa'ar shel iser. So the Gemara says that doesn't work for Rabbi Shimon. He says Rabbi Shimon le'tamei, the Amar afilu iser ve'iser nami lo mitzdarfe. Rabbi Shimon believes that if you have the following scenario, let's say you have 100 kezesim of heter, and we have two isurim, orla and kilaya kerem, that each one needs 200 to be mevatel them. And I have a half a kezias, let's say, a half a kezias of orla that falls into 100 kezesim of heter, so you now have 200 and you're fine. All right, let's make the math easier. One kezias of orla falls into 200 kezesim of heter, and now it's mutter. Now let's say just one kezias of orla falls in. What about one kezias of orla and kilaya and one kezias of kilaya kerem fall in? So if you would count the two isurim together, so then they would both, then we'd have only 100 times heter keneged the iser, and therefore it would be prohibited. Whereas, if you say isurim anat mitzdarfim, then the 100 of heter is mevatel the kezias of orla, and the 100 of heter is mevatel the kezias of kiloi hakerem, and that's the way Rabbi Shimon paskins. And therefore Rabbi Shimon says that in our case, the sa'or, of Hulim, the Sar Shel Truma, the Heter is not mitzdar for the Isser, and as long as you don't get Hanah directly or solely, as long as the Sar Shel Truma has the impact of having a negative impact in the end, so Rabbi Shimon says that's considered no Saint Tam of Gam, and it would be permitted. Okay, any questions up until here? No. Okay, so